Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Locate Travel podcast. No matter where you are in the world, thank you for tuning in. My name is Kate, and I'm the founder of Locate Travel, an actionable resource portal that helps you design your life abroad, one that you won't need a vacation from. You can check it out at locatetravel.com. That's L-O-K-A-T-E travel.com. During each episode of this podcast, I will be interviewing guests, sharing experiences, and uncovering the strategies and resources you need to build the life that makes sense for you, whether that is fully moving to another country or just finding new and exciting ways to inject more travel experiences in your life. There are options for everyone, no matter your life or financial situation. And this podcast and our blog is what I hope will help to get you there. So I hope you'll tag along on this adventure and join me for new episodes on tips, tricks, and advice on how you can get started. Today, I'm joined by Haley and Mauricio, also known as the Adventure Travel Couple on Instagram. Haley and Mauricio are a Canadian-Mexican couple living in Toronto. In 2017, they decided to leave their jobs to travel the world for a year. The plan? 27 countries in 12 months. Their goals were to eat all the food, experience all the things, and learn as much as possible about the world, themselves, and of course, one another. Today, we'll uncover just how they prepared for their massive life change, if their plan carried out through the year, and more importantly, what they learned and how they're transitioning back into life in Canada. Haley and Mauricio, welcome back. It's so great to see you guys.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. I'm so thrilled that you allowed me to come and interview you today. So how did this all start? Like, where did this idea come from to take your jobs off for a year and travel the world?
Well, I think both of us have always been very passionate about traveling, and we've always talked about it since we started dating. It's always been a thing that we've discussed and we've been passionate about. About, I would say, maybe 10 years ago when I first started work, a colleague of mine had done the same thing. He took a year off with his wife, traveled the world. He told me all about it, and I think that was one of the first seeds that were planted. And then Haley and I have discussed this over time. I think we discussed at first how wonderful it would be to take 3 months off work.
And then from there, we were like, if you're going to do 3 months, that's not enough time, so why wouldn't you do six months? And then we said, well, fuck it, if you're gonna do
six months, let's go for the full year. So that's sort of how it all started. And recounting this funny story that we had, we met this couple at a wedding one time, at a friend's wedding, and we were I don't know how we got into the topic of kids and having kids, and I guess we were just curious, and we asked them, how did you decide to have kids? At one point, they both just looked at each other and they just said, fuck it, it'll be fun, let's do it. Actually, and then later on, one point when they had their kids, they're like, is this fucking fun? So anyways, go ahead.
That's become a bit of a life motto for us.
Fuck it, it'll be fun. So at one point we were like, should we take the year off, and are we gonna regret it, are we not? Fuck it, it'll be fun. But really, actually, the more insightful motto is, or the decision-making model that we had, was we will likely regret if we don't do this, and we will likely not regret doing this. So you know what, let's do it.
So you have this idea, the seed is planted to go away for the year. What is life actually like before you leave? Can you give us a synopsis of the average daily life for you guys in Toronto?
It was actually a lot of fun. It was hard to leave in many ways. I think we were both in a really good groove at work, with our friends, with our downtown lifestyle, all this stuff. So a lot of people always ask us if we left because we were unhappy with our jobs, or if we were, you know, wanting to press a reset button, all this stuff. And I don't think we felt that way. I think both of us were very engaged in our jobs. And actually, that's why we're both, I mean, I'll do a little bit of foreshadowing here. We're both back in the same companies that we left. So we were both really happy and grateful to be able to do that. And both of us were really happy before we left.
So what was the planning process like? You have this idea, life is good, you're excited to potentially travel. Where did you start? What happened? How did you figure out what countries you wanted to go to, what you even wanted to do? Walk me through that process.
Countries, that's a good question. We both wrote a list out of all the countries that we wanted to go to, and then we basically put them on top of each other to see which ones overlapped. And then we each gave each other one country that the other person was kind of like, not so interested in, but that was like the one non-negotiable for each of us. So Mauricio's was Japan and mine was India,
which ended up being month-long countries. So because I was so passionate about Japan, which also a little foreshadowing was my favorite country in the whole trip, so we spent a month there. And then Haley said, for India as well, we got to do the whole month.
And then also planning, then it became really a financial thing. We were researching tons of blogs to figure out how much we would need or how much we should budget per day. And then once we figured out that number, which all the blogs told us about $100 per day, that's $100 US per day, then we just started saving for that.
Yeah, there was a few other things that also happened as well. We, once we had like the, just to get a little bit more practical with the process, after we wrote down what countries we wanted to visit and we like had the whole dance and negotiated back and forth, okay, well, I really want to go here, and well, I really want to go here, and I've been here before and all that stuff, then we sort of landed on here's a lot of countries, and we did about four or five different things with that. One was we mapped it all on a map. So here's all the countries. Is there a natural flow? We also had both agreed on some principles. No Europe. We both had been, it's great times. We can always go back with kids. Very kid friendly, very expensive. Our dollars won't go as far. So Europe was out of the question. And so we knew, okay, based on that, the countries. And so once we mapped them out, I think we must have done like six or seven different mappings of like flowing and how we could flow the different countries. And so some of them would go in, some of them would go out.
And where we would start.
Yes. And so one of the things that Haley actually did was mapped out all the countries and then overlaid that to the best times of years to go visit. So then based on that, we color coded it. We geeked out hard on Excel. And so we like put all the countries and then we like yellow, you know, the best times to visit. And so then based on that, we tried to follow the yellow all throughout the column and then overlaid that into the actual map. And then once we had a better and better idea, then we got real down nitty gritty. So what we did, what I did, because I'm really the geek in Excel, but and then Haley populates and helps do all the research. But what I ended up doing was put together this, it's not really even a model. We put all the countries once we had the general flow. So you put all the countries down, and then on the right side, I had an equation that would calculate sort of based on the amount of days that we were in each country, where that would spit us out 6 months later, 3 months later, 2.5 weeks later, etc.
The hilarious part is that once Mauricio had this put together, like all the places and roughly how many days we'd want to spend in each place, it almost equaled 365 exactly.
Yeah.
The first time.
Yeah, and then and he got us to my hometown for Christmas. So it was like almost very elegant, and it was a way of being like, okay, this works, right? So again, like in one column, the date, the countries, the next column, the formula with the date, and the next one, how many days we want to spend in the country. And so, and then some notes, and that actually ended up morphing into this big spreadsheet of notes and festivals and what else we could do in each country. Anyways, that's that.
Sounds very thorough.
Yes. A lot of preparation.
But that's what it takes to put a trip like this together, right? Is the preparation part of it. So you had, you know, dollars a day that you were allocating to spend. How much in total did you guys save per person before leaving?
We ended up saving and estimating $50,000 per person. Yeah, US dollars, $50,000 for both of us, per person. So 100,000 US for the whole year. And that was, again, based on flights, on the estimates that we got online, on how much you could travel for in Southeast Asia, how much you could travel for in South America, et cetera, put all out together. Also putting into account indulgences and splurging and stuff like that.
Nice. And when you were saving all this money, what were your primary strategies? Was it just being more conscious about your spending? Did you have any other alternate sources of income? What helped you save so much money?
We tried to save money in a lot of different ways. So one, we tightened our budget a little bit more. Like we started asking ourselves, like, should we have this beer or this cocktail while we're out? We kind of reframed it actually of like, never mind questioning, should we have this? We were like, this one beer could be like an entire day in whatever country. So we started weighing out those differences too. What do we do? We also did a
garage sale. We did Airbnb-ing. We Airbnb'd our second bedroom here at our condo. And thanks to that, we were able to generate additional income.
Yeah, we Kijiji'd a ton of stuff. We had a honey fund for our wedding. So instead of people giving us gifts or actual gifts, we were asking for contributions towards different experiences.
Yeah. And we were specific about, like, we want to, you know, hike Mount Rinjani in Indonesia. And so if you want to contribute towards that, you can contribute in like $20 tranches or whatever, right? And so people felt actually attached to a specific gift. And and we made sure to loop back with a lot of those friends and family and send them an e-photo saying thanks for your help, your contribution to this gift.
That's so nice. I love that. That's such a great way to help people be a part of your special trip. You know, when you're planning for it. So obviously income, super important. What about debt? Did you guys have any debt prior to leaving? Did you make sure that that was paid off? How did you manage any debt obligations that you may or may not have?
So we own a condo in Toronto. So we rented that out. We were super lucky to rent it out furnished. And basically the rental that we got covered the cost of our condo, our mortgage, our maintenance fees, everything. And then I was carrying like a line of credit as well. So we were paying that off. We had planned on, we kind of budgeted for a little bit extra to continue paying that off while we were away. And then actually while we were away is when we paid it off completely.
Yeah. So one of the things that we did while traveling, I'm getting into sort of other topics here, but was invest money in the stock market. So that's something that I've had as a hobby for quite some time now. So based on some of the knowledge that Haley and I had on the specific industries that we work in, the competitors, the industry dynamics, all those things, we felt a little bit more confident placing this adult gambling bets in the stock market, because really that's what it is. But anyways, it was good. It was fruitful to be able to do that. Cannabis stocks, as our readers may or may not know, exploded over the last year as well, or listeners, yeah. So that also did very well, and with that money we were able to pay off Haley's line of credit as well.
Awesome. So you have chosen a whole bunch of countries that you want to visit. You know, we're very fortunate that we're Canadians and we have passports, and you know, a lot of the times you don't necessarily need a visa to travel to most countries. But what kind of research did you do to ensure that you had the proper travel arrangements made before leaving? What countries did you need a visa for? What was maybe the most complex country you had to apply for a visa for? Anything like that?
The two that I remember that we had to get were India and Tanzania.
India, I think, must have been the most complex one.
It was the most demanding in terms of like everything that you had to submit. Most countries now have like e-visas or like visas on arrival, so those were the only two that we actually had to get in advance.
We did also have the I forget what the website is. We can post it up on your blog later, Katie, but that just checks for Canadian citizens which visas they require. So that was a constant sort of like every month or so we would check, okay, for the next two or three countries that we planned on going, like, are we covered, right? And if we're not, then that's not by a ticket to go there. So we're very flexible in that regard.
And the only place where Mauricio also has a Mexican passport, and the only place that served him very well.
Two places, but yes, go ahead.
Mexico.
Mexico, because you get to skip the foreigner line, right? Like if you're going into Mexico from a US or whatever other country, then typically there's very few Mexicans.
And aside from Mexico, yeah, it also served him well in Colombia, because a Canadian needs to pay $60 upon entry. So Mexicans don't. So he was able to like play which passport he wanted to use.
It was awesome. The other time, the only time that we were actually caught a bit flat-footed was at the airport in, I forget where we were. It must have been Fiji or Tonga, but we were on our way to Australia. And apparently we needed an e-visa to get into Australia. And it's something that we just didn't think about, being a Commonwealth country and everything. We're like, no way. Like, obviously with Canadian passports, we can just get in. And so at the ticket counter, we whipped out our phones and did the whole process and just like crossed our fingers that we would get it. And we got it in like 20 minutes.
So true.
Otherwise, we would have been screwed. It was awesome, but also not very awesome.
Thank God for smartphones, right? Yes. So you're about to leave, or even prior to that, what was the reactions from your coworkers, your friends, your employers? Were they open to the idea? How did you manage to convince your employers to take a year off? Because as you just mentioned, you're both at the same companies now, but when you were leaving, like, were you going to be giving up your full-time jobs?
I ended up leaving. So we both made the decision that we were definitely doing this no matter how our employers reacted.
We hoped that they would react favorably and that we could come to terms with, I'm going to go anyways. I want to come back. I hope you want me to come back. Can we make this work? Type of thing. Unfortunately for Haley, because she had only been at her employer for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, it wasn't as favorable. They weren't able to extend that sort of privilege to her to take off for an entire year. I had been with my employer for close to 8 years, and the role that I had at the time, I won't go into it much, but there was sort of like a natural ending to it. So I could pass the baton over to somebody else and I wasn't leaving a desk empty. There was no need to do a lot of juggling around for me. So that worked out nicely.
How did your employer take it?
Not well. At first, my direct boss said that this would have direct material negative material consequences on my career, and so that I shouldn't do it. And we got into obviously a bit of a discussion about that. I think for a bit more context for the listeners, when we went out for lunch, he was also during that time, he was offering me another job. So we were talking about succession plans for when I ended my role with him, where else I could go in the company. And so he had a phenomenal role for me. And it was actually a dream role that I would have loved to take. And so I can totally understand that. We're going out for lunch. He's telling me this great news, like, hey, I found like a really cool next gig for you. What do you think? And I say, thanks, but I actually want to leave. So with that context in mind, I totally understand where he was coming from. But he came around and he leaned on the opinions of a few of his colleagues, and it actually worked out very well, and we're in good terms, and he's very supportive, and he became very supportive. And I think people recognized that this was a very, you know, a great experience, a great life experience that I can then diffuse back into the company.
You could bring back your experiences and your skills, your learnings, whatever else, and actually have a more positive career path, and it wouldn't be so detrimental or damaging, right? Totally. So it's awesome. What were you guys looking for out of your trip? You know, were you looking to accomplish something specific? Were you just looking for a break? Were you looking to absorb as much culture? Did you each have like sort of a different goal for what you would hope to get at the end of the 12 months?
Yeah, we said that our goals were to experience as much as possible, eat all the food, like really try everything. We wanted to learn things. Mauricio and I both did a Muay Thai training camp. We did salsa, dancing. Like
intensive salsa classes, lots of cooking classes all around the world as well. Haley did a couple of weeks of intensive Spanish classes. I did a samurai class, et cetera, et cetera. So all these things definitely played into what we wanted to do. I think both of us also had the intention to read all the books that we've been meaning to read, that laundry list. I remember asking everybody if they had any good book recommendations for while we were traveling, and so I compiled that list, and we were just able to get into a lot of the topics that we were interested in. Yeah, so
that we didn't necessarily have time, like you don't have the time to take 4 hours of dance classes when you're leading your 9-to-5 life, right? So we were doing 5 hours of Muay Thai a day. Like we really tried to immerse ourselves into these experiences that we just wouldn't ever do at home.
Yeah. Another thing too, I guess a little bit tangentially though, one of our goals was to obviously come out of this with a more positive relationship. Our relationship was great to begin with, and that was great. That's a great blessing that we had going into the trip. But we were definitely warned by a few people, my grandpa being one of them, to make sure that we took care of each other and we took care of the relationship. And so we did. That was great. I can go into it. We read books about it, and we were like very conscientious on like making sure that we were communicating with each other effectively, and we were in tune with each other's moods and energy levels, and making sure that the other person had what they needed and felt safe and all these things. And it worked great, actually. Like we came out of it with a huge positive impact. I would say that like out of all the experiences and everything, that was one of the top things that we came out of with the trip. Heart for you, Haley. Big heart for you.
That's so sweet. So it's like not only did you prepare for your trip, but you prepared your relationship for the trip as well, right? Which is sometimes maybe something that couples might forget to do and then potentially run into issues during the trip, right?
Totally. If you want to test your relationship, travel or engage in a renovation.
Solid advice. Okay, so, you know, we go from a 9-to-5 job, busy life in Toronto, working some pretty, you know, busy jobs, involved jobs, to suddenly being not really on vacation, but taking this new experience in. So did it take a few days or maybe even a few weeks to really like remember that you're not working and like to relax, to adjust to this new life of not necessarily doing anything every day? How did you adjust to that?
So we had the first 3 weeks planned out on our trip. So we knew what we were going to be doing for those 3 weeks. I would say that we lived the first 4 months like we were on a week or 2 week vacation. Like every single day we were out, we were seeing things. I would say it took us 4 months to like actually slow down and not just go from like kind of vacation mode of trying to see and like experience all of those things to like actually enjoying, not that we weren't enjoying before, but like enjoying it on a different level and really like relaxing into it.
There's definitely different ways to vacation, to travel, to experience, right? And I think, you know, anybody who's been in a 2 week vacation or a 2 week, you know, traveling vacation somewhere, you typically don't, in those 2 weeks, you don't schedule a full day or a full 2 days of doing nothing, so of Netflix and chilling.
That's probably why people always go on a vacation and then they feel like they need a vacation from their vacation, right?
Because they come back. I mean, we've always said, okay, so there's vacationing and then there's travel, right? Vacationing is you go to the all-inclusive and you sit on the beach and it's super relaxing. And then there's traveling. Whenever you're traveling, you typically don't take a moment and say, I'm going to spend all day Netflix and chilling at the hotel. Like, you're in Europe, you're in South America, you're in Machu Picchuing, whatever, right? And so for us, that became 4 months of like non-stop. How can we just have an off day today? What are we just going to do nothing while Tokyo is outside of our door? No, we obviously need to do more things. And so that very quickly caught up to us and it took us a while. We also had friends who traveled around in a retrofitted van around the US. Great guys who they were chasing the hikes. They're mountain climbers. Anyways, for them, they said that it took them 3 months to like really unwind, to feel the stress, the speed, the pace of Toronto life, like really dissipate and sort of melt away. And that's something that we definitely noticed when we came back, how quickly people were talking, etc. So
you had some pretty aggressive plans when you started. It was, you wanted to visit over how many countries?
27, I think, was the initial goal.
That's a lot. When did you realize that that wasn't overly realistic? And were you sort of sad or disappointed in that? You know, how did that factor into your planning, into your trip, into your goals that year?
Well, we wanted to go. We've always called ourselves overly ambitious. And so this trip was definitely that, overly ambitious. And after the first 4 months, I personally hit a wall. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I felt like I needed to go home for a vacation because we just didn't stop. And I think it was that moment where I was also homesick. Like, I remember thinking, at one point, I remember thinking I'm torturing myself by not going home. Like, if people live away, they generally go home, they see friends and family. And because we had this 1 year, it was like 1 year that we were going to spend away. And so it all really caught up with us about 4 months in, caught up with me. And after that, we rejigged everything. So we were in Japan at the time. We cut out a bunch of places that we wanted to go to in Japan. We were going to spend quite a few weeks going to like Cambodia, Laos, all these other places. And we cut those out.
All throughout Southeast Asia, all throughout Japan, all throughout South America.
Yeah. We cut those out and we just like spent 3 weeks just in Indonesia. And then the same thing happened when we went to South America. We planned on doing like all of South America. We ended up only getting to Peru and Colombia. And then we spent 5 weeks in Mexico, where Mauricio's from. So that was still like, we were still moving, but it was like it was low key. Like we were still in one place. Yeah.
So in Mexico, those 5 weeks, you know, we're spent more sort of going deeper with the culture and like 2 weeks in one place, whereas otherwise we would have spent 5 weeks going to Argentina, Chile, Colombia, Brazil, Uruguay. Like we wanted to go everywhere in 5 weeks. And so we were just at the end of the trip, we were like, nah, no thanks. Like, let's stay in one place and do it well. And Colombia actually was a lot of that as well. We were 5 weeks in Colombia and two of those weeks were in Medellin. And it was like we were living there, right? Haley was taking, you know, she was waking up with an alarm clock, going to her Spanish classes. I was taking salsa classes mid-morning. She was joining me afterwards. We're taking more salsa classes in the afternoon, going for the group. Like, it was more about living there. We cooked at our Airbnb almost every day. I would say like 95% of the meals were cooked indoors, etc. So it was a different pace for the back half, which is really cool that we were able to have that flexibility and then just decide and boom.
Because at the end of the day, it is your trip, right? So it's, you know, you don't have to think about other people's expectations. Yes. It's what you want to do and what you want to accomplish. How did you guys deal with currency? You obviously went to a lot of different countries. Did you rely mostly on cash? Did you use cards? Walk me through that.
So we also took on different roles during the trip. My role was all the planning. So like finding out where we were staying, the Airbnbs, the flights, all that. And Mauricio's was the money. I actually didn't touch cash for the year.
I made sure that Haley always had some local currency stuffed away in her bra or like in her hat.
Stuffed, yeah. Bra. That's not weird. It wasn't just like stuffed in my bra.
It was
bra.
Like one of those Lulu with a pocket built into it. Sorry, I wasn't putting my hand down. For sure.
That Thank you for clarifying.
Or a credit card as well, just to make sure that we, if we ever got separated or whatever, that she also, like, even though she wasn't touching money, she had some. How did we do it? So generally we had US dollars as backup. Our number one purchasing tool was a no foreign transaction fee credit card for those Canadians. It's the Rogers Bank. Chase used to have the Marriott one as well, which we took on our trip. It's now been sunset. I think it's gone as of the end of April. But the advantage of a no foreign transaction fee credit card is a lot of people don't know, because, you know, if you use your CIBC or your TD credit card abroad, all you see is your purchase. If you see your income statement, all you see is the charge. But what you don't see is that the foreign transaction fee is actually rolled already in. It's rolled in, right? It's hidden in there. Sneaky. So what the Rogers Bank did was, not only did they not charge us a foreign transaction fee, we also got 1.75% of all our purchases back in cash for a limited number of uses. Specifically, we have our cell phone bills covered for the rest of our lives, pretty much now, because of all that cash back that we accumulated there. So we did that. From a local currency perspective, we typically found that ATM withdrawals, even though the ATM fees do kill you, and we must have spent probably close to like $600-$800 on ATM fees, like all in, that actually gives you a better rate a lot of the times. But really, we used two of the apps that we used a lot. One of them was a currency converter, and I can post that up on your blog as well. I can tell you exactly which one we use, which is great. And so we would use that app in real time. We would go up at the airport and see what the airport exchange rates were, which are typically more expensive, right? Those exchange places have to pay for expensive airport real estate. So we would compare that, and then typically if it was too far off what the spot rate exchange is on the app, we would go to the ATM. And at the ATM, we would buy our dollars, our local currency. And then at the next airport on the way out, whatever we had left over, we would translate into the next currency of the next country, right? And so that's mostly how we did it.
Did you ever have like a scary moment, or like moments, hopefully not, but like, was there anything, dangerous situations that you experienced or got into?
We were super fortunate that we didn't have any scary situations. Like, never mind did we not have any scary situations. Like, we never found ourselves in a dangerous situation. We were certainly in some more dangerous places. Like, we were in Cape Town, which is pretty dangerous, a few other places, but we really learned to play by their rules. So like in Cape Town, for example, we were told like, you do not walk at night. Like, even if you have to walk 100 meters, you do not do that. So you take an Uber from wherever you are to the next place. And we really followed those rules. In Colombia, they told us not to use our cell phones in the street. And so
especially in Bogota.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so we really followed that. And I think that really saved us. And we were also fortunate, like, we didn't get sick. I mean, there were a few sicknesses like colds or whatnot, but we also had a cocktail of shots beforehand. So I think that saved us. But we also got some really good advice before we left. And it was, if you don't
peel it, cook it, or wash it with clean water,
Don't eat it. And we also got the advice that one of our first stops, when we were going to a night market and we were asking our guide where to go, and he was like, I can't tell you which stall to go to, but my advice is follow the local women, because they will go to like the clean stalls.
Never failed us actually. Like, it's so, we were so fortunate, and there was definitely a lot of times that we had to like make a sacrifice and be like, I'm not gonna have what looks to be a really delicious food, because I don't know.
It was called rolling the dice.
Yes, we did a few times, and we're like, oh, okay, you're gonna roll the dice. Go ahead, have your salad. Have that mango.
Mango can be peeled.
Yes, it's true. Mango actually was never ever axed. We always had mango. That's a bad example.
And the other thing too on this topic is that we never lost anything. Like, we lost maybe a scarf, or like, we never had things stolen. We were really particular about where we kept our things. And we also traveled for the year in a carry-on backpack, and that forced us to have, like, we had a system to it. So we had a place for all of our clothes, a place for all of our toiletries, a place for all of our electronics. And I think that saved us from losing anything, because you knew if you were missing something in your bag, because there was essentially like a gaping hole.
A place for everything, and everything in its place.
Excellent quote. Loved it. Did you ever split up during your trip, or did you spend the entire 12 months together?
So we actually had planned beforehand. We were like, oh yeah, we were like excited to obviously have some alone time. We both have traveled alone, and we both obviously see the benefits that traveling alone has. I think we both enjoy it. It's super introspective, and you just have a bit of a different vibe. We actually didn't end up splitting up as much as we thought we would at the beginning of the trip. And the only times that we split up were essentially like two or three times. The only noteworthy time that was more than an afternoon was for 2 weeks. So we did a Muay Thai training camp in Thailand, and Haley was definitely into it, but she thought 2 weeks would be just enough. And so 2 weeks was definitely fun and fine for her. And she spent the other 2 weeks going back to Indonesia, to Bali, with one of her best friends. I stayed in Thailand for the remaining 2 weeks. Other than that, we had like maybe four or five afternoons where it was, I wanted to go do something, Haley was too tired, or the other way around, and we just said, okay, we'll see you for dinner.
Nice. What were some of the most impactful experiences that you had while away?
The most impactful experience that we had was one of our first stops in Tanzania. So we
literally the second week of our trip, and this is happening to us.
Yeah. And so we had an Airbnb. We had a driver that was driving us to this Airbnb, and we were having such a hard time getting a hold of our host. And she like sent me messages, but they were kind of cryptic. And we thought we were at the house, but we weren't sure. Our guide is trying to call her and like figure out what's happening. She's like, just call my boyfriend, he knows where the keys are. We call the boyfriend, he doesn't know what's going on. Like, we're just like, what is happening here?
We're both like tired, obviously frustrated. We both have done Airbnb. Like we were super doing that before we left. We know what good looks like, and we're like so disappointed with this. Oh my God. Like, I already know what type of review I'm gonna give them. And like all this harsh stuff, right? Yeah, just harsh. Harshness. All, like obviously the tiredness, that you're in like somewhere new, all playing into it. Your expectations and your reality are not together. And that's always the cause of discomfort.
And so she got home that night, and she worked at this place called the Plaster House. And she was like, I'm so sorry that I wasn't there when you guys were arriving, or that I wasn't able to communicate with you. But where she works, this Plaster House, they help kids with like club feet, cleft palates, all these things where they really change these kids' lives. And so she told us, she was like, I'm really sorry. At that moment, Dad dropped off a baby, a 13-month-old baby that weighed 3.3 kilograms, which is like 7 pounds, a little bit more than that, that was HIV positive and had a cleft lip and was super malnourished. And it was that moment.
And the dad came in and said, I can't deal with this anymore. Here you go.
Like literally just like dropped into her lap. And that's, I mean, we went to the Plaster House afterwards and we saw these incredible kids that were going through all these surgeries. The incredible work that she was doing, like she was having a direct impact on these kids' lives every single day. Yeah. And it really made us just be like, it made us really check ourselves.
Yeah, it was at the right time, like just the way the universe works. Like it was at the very right time of our trip to just check ourselves in terms of our expectations, our reality, our perspective on other people, on the world, etc.
In Canada, like those are things that you never see, right? Like you might see somebody that had a cleft palate or a cleft lip, but you never see people that are like in society with club feet. And so that was also, we realized how privileged we were at that moment, that like, wow, we kept saying like we won the lottery, like we won the birthing lottery of where we were born. So it gave us like a new perspective of reality, and it also like made us really thankful for the lives that we've lived.
Yeah, and just also a good humble constant reminder to always give people the benefit of the doubt, right? Like how foolish did we feel afterwards when we're like, like why was this such a Yankee check-in process? Well, because this person was dealing with an HIV positive 10-pound baby in her lap. Like that's why. So just chill and give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of my favorite things about travel is how much perspective it does provide you, right? You know, we're very blessed to be living and growing up in Canada, but you know, you travel to other places in the world and things aren't like they are here, right? Good and bad. So perspective is always number one. If you had to highlight a couple of your favorite moments or places that you visited on your trip, would you be able to to give me three each? Your favorites?
Definitely. My favorite country was Japan for a whole host of reasons. I really love the culture. I love their dedication to their craft, whatever their craft may be. The food was just phenomenal. And it was a great, like contextually, it was just a great break right in the middle of our trip. It was in April, May. And it just provided a lot of the comforts of back home as well that we were looking for. Very clean, very safe, very hygienic, all this stuff. And just a very interesting culture. So I definitely love Japan. Highly recommend it. The onsens, like the bathhouses there are phenomenal, etc. My number one experience for me from a learning standpoint was the Muay Thai camp. I can't remember the last time I dedicated myself to one thing for an entire month, 5 hours a day, wholeheartedly, nutrition-wise, sleep-wise, like everything was geared around the performance, the mental stamina to be able to perform during class and stuff. So that was a lot of fun. And the number one experience, and I know and I share this with Haley, was snorkeling with the humpback whales in the Kingdom of Tonga, which was a lot of fun. It was for about 5-6 days. You go out into the ocean every day, into the sea. The, you know, a whole pack of whales are there for their... They go there to give birth. And so we got to see calves. We got to see curious adults just chilling with us, like roaming around, these gentle giants. It was just a phenomenal experience. Highly recommend it.
What about you, Haley?
I have like two different lists. One of my top experiences and then one of places I'd go back to in a heartbeat. So of the experiences is exactly what Mauricio just mentioned of swimming with humpback whales in Tonga. One of the only places in the world that you can do that. We also had an incredible experience in the Philippines. Tao Philippines. If you're ever going to the Philippines, you have to go. It's a 5-day boating experience between all these like deserted islands or small fishing villages. And it was such a complete experience. The guides were amazing. They could do everything. We were catching fish off the back of bluefin tuna off the back of the boat with a line. They were climbing coconut trees and cutting them down and like cutting the coconuts down. We'd be making coconut milk that night to make the curry for dinner. Like it was just such a cool, complete experience. And then the third one was we went gorilla trekking in Rwanda. So you climb up into the mountains and once you find a family of gorillas, you have an hour to chill with them. And it was just so amazing to see these other animals that are so like us. Like you almost understood their like thoughts and their expressions because they're so similar to us. And then alternatively to that, so that those were like top experiences. And then places I'd go back to in a heartbeat, again, some overlapping, are Colombia, the Philippines, and Indonesia.
As a side note, just to riff off what she's saying, two of the most underrated countries in Asia, Philippines and Taiwan. Taiwan had such amazing food, amazing people as well, super friendly, lots of fun. And the Philippines has some of the most beautiful, stunning scenery beach-wise and some great dive spots and amazing, fun, outgoing, very like lighthearted people. So two of the most underrated countries for sure.
Love that. So there was something that towards the end of your trip, something exciting that happened. Would you be able to share what that something was and when, how did that decision come about and how did it come to be?
So we had obviously a full year to talk about a lot of things, whether or not to have babies, our life plans, life goals, all these things. It was actually great. One of those things was investments that we want to make next. And one of the things that Haley and I have been passionate about for the last little while as well has been real estate. And so we have a few ideas in the hopper in terms of how we can have some real estate in the future. But for now, we had decided we wanted to invest in a little casita in Mexico. And so we ended up buying we ended up buying a house in San Miguel Allende, which is where we got married. A beautiful little charming colonial town in the center of Mexico, about 3 hours north of Mexico City. Voted the most beautiful city in the world by Travel and Leisure. I'm not sure how those things get determined, but it sure is beautiful. And we were there and reliving some of our wedding memories. And originally we actually had thought of buying a little property somewhere else in Mexico. And the longer version of the story is that we went into a real estate agency just to sort of get a little bit of practice in real estate in Mexico. Yeah, with houses and everything. And
know what kind of questions, like when we were planning going to this other place, like knowing what kind of questions a real estate agent would even ask that we could prepare ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then we bought the house.
Mm-hmm. So you walked in and you walked out with a house.
Yes, pretty much. I mean, we, yeah.
A few more details than that.
Yeah, it was, we saw a few houses that night. It was like literally the last day that we were there. We were able to put in an offer that was conditional on a few different things, which bought us time to actually crunch some numbers, put a couple of business cases together, get some more information about how much we could rent it out for, like, does it pay out, how do we pay for it, all these things. If the listeners are wondering, we ended up taking a home equity line of credit out against our condo, what's called a HELOC, for a very low interest rate, and using that to pay for our property down there. The numbers made sense, and at that point, because it was the end of the trip, we knew that at least I would have a job coming back. Haley was also in discussions with her current employer, so there was very low risk in terms of us being able to pay that back. And that's that. And now we're renting it. It's on Airbnb. And welcome anytime, guys.
We'll post the listing in the show notes. Help you get a few customers, hopefully. How did time feel in general? You know, we're sort of talking towards the end of your trip, but like, how did time feel throughout the trip? And then as your trip sort of wound down, did it feel like it sped up, or was it pretty slow paced throughout the whole year?
Once we got into it a little bit more, once we were able to sort of unwind a little bit, we both felt that we were way more mindful about time, and every day was sort of, it sounds so cliche, but like, it was really lived. We lived every day. Every day was experienced. It was at the end of the trip, I would
call it a full year. Like, yeah. years, weeks, months, like, they seem to go by so fast at home.
They blend with each other.
Exactly. Like, you ask, what did you eat yesterday, and you can't even remember. And this was like such a full, complete year where we can remember so many of these experiences because they were so new and novel, and it was just such a different perspective on life. It felt like being a kid again, where the year feels like it's never going to end. And that's what this past year felt.
Totally. I think near the end of the trip, we both were pretty confident that we could rhyme off at least one thing that we did in chronological order every single day about 80% of the trip, which is like very powerful to think that you could walk through a whole year and say, you know, we did this day, and then we went here, and then we went here, and then we did this, and then we did this, and all the way through, right? Like Haley said, like, I can't remember what I did last Tuesday, you know, and that's eight days ago. Tuesday night, what you do last Tuesday? Yo.
Days ago, aren't there only 7 in a week?
It's Wednesday today. So a week and a day ago, Haley.
Were you guys ready to come home? Did you want to come home?
Honestly, we actually both didn't want to come home, but we were both at different points in the trip ready to come home because of different things that we missed, right? So we missed our own bed, right? We invested in a king size freaking bed so that we could have a delicious mattress with all the space in the world, and we missed having that. We missed the routine, which allows you to actually pack a lot of things into your day as well.
Projects. We missed projects. Yeah.
Salads as well.
Oh my gosh. Salads and fresh vegetables.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah. And going and like doing exercise as well. I love running, and I was able to run in a lot of the places, but a lot of the places you actually are not able to run either, right? Like it was hard to run. I did run, but it was hard to run in Delhi with the smog and everything, right? And
I definitely felt that as a woman. Like, I've never thought about running or exercising here in Canada, but I was very aware of it outside, like in different countries.
Yeah,
like,
in terms of safety?
Not so much safety, but like the tight clothes that we wear here are just not appropriate to wear, like shorts.
Faux pas of it all, of wearing short shorts and like a tank top, where actually there's not a single woman in that country that wears tank tops. Like there's no shorts
for that matter.
Yeah,
like
shorts. Yeah, women don't wear shorts in that country. So that's one of the things that we loved about the Philippines. It was like one of the first countries
God, women are wearing shorts here again. Yeah. I feel like we digressed from your question.
Coming back.
So, I mean, I think at different points we're like, oh, we missed this about home. I can't wait to be back and experience this again. But once it was becoming a reality, I think both of us were like, man, we can stay here a few more months.
Yeah, the hardest part was coming back in January.
Yeah, you guys didn't plan that very well.
No, that was kind of, yeah.
Torturous.
Yeah, it was actually. When I had my handshake with my employer, it was like, you're taking off for a year, so a year it is. And so
you pushed that back as far as, like, Mauricio pushed it back as far as he could. Yes, but
yeah, I dragged my as much as I could. But I was also, the role that I came back to do was backfilling a mat leave that had been gone for a few months. So like every month that I was not there, just killing the team, right? So at one point or another, we just had to come back, and we did come back. And because Haley hadn't secured her job, she was like, well, this is fun, bye. And so she went back to Mexico for a few weeks.
Had a girl, yes.
to go get our house set up and all that stuff, right? But so yeah.
Did you guys experience reverse culture shock when you came back to Canada and Toronto?
Always the most shocking, the reverse culture shock.
One of the things that I noticed right away, I think Mauricio mentioned it earlier, is just how fast people talk and walk here. I remember listening to some friends talking and I was like, oh my gosh, my brain cannot even keep up with what you're saying right now. That was a realization. Around the walking, I've also come to the realization that it's freezing here and people walk fast in the winter to stay warm. And I think that just carries out through the year. What other things? We also were, because we had been living out of a carry-on backpack, coming back and opening our closets full of stuff. I think that was really challenging.
Totally. You just feel like all this clothes is like jumping out at you almost. And you're going down this sort of weird memory lane of like, oh yeah, I remember these shorts. And oh yeah.
You don't even remember that you own these things. So that was really challenging. And actually because of that, Mauricio started work pretty fast after we got back, but I spent a lot of time going through like every single item that we owned. To provide more context on that too, when we were away, I went on a deep dive of minimalism and I read the book Marie Kondo, I believe her name is, of, now I'm totally blanking out, The Life
Changing Magic of Tidying Up.
So I read that book and then I like literally wrote a list of every single item that we needed in our home. For also additional context to that, we'd been living in nothing but Airbnbs where they had nothing but everything you needed. So it really gave us perspective of what you actually need to live. And living out of the carry-on backpack, we never felt like we were missing anything. Like our clothes took us from a beach to like a cold mountain hike, and we had everything in between and we didn't miss anything. So that was the real like, oh my gosh, we have so much stuff.
Yeah. So much stuff. And now that we've actually gone through this process, Haley like really championed that, and I begrudgingly sort of followed suit, but then actually got into it myself. And now that we have a very lean sort of apartment and possessions and everything, it actually feels really, really nice.
Knowing what you know now and the experiences that you've had, if you were able to talk to Haley and Mauricio before you guys left on your grand adventure, what advice or precautions or information would you be sure to give yourselves?
Be flexible, I think is a big one. I've talked to a lot of people who, when they asked us, did you plan it all out? Like, oh my God, I can only imagine how much work that would have been. I think they're asking that, thinking that if they had gone away for a year, that they would have had everything planned out. And certainly we actually met couples along the way that had everything planned out, like massive spreadsheets on spreadsheets on spreadsheets.
Sounds similar though to yours.
Ours were flexible. Ours was like a general guideline. Yeah,
and that's why the formulas were in the spreadsheet, Katie, so that if you change something, everything auto-populated afterwards.
I would also go to, if I were to do this all over again, which I think the good news is we both are interested in doing it again. So
spend more time in each country. Yes. Go deeper.
Spend less time. Live in places. Live in places. Maybe go to a handful of places throughout the year and
rent an apartment for like 3-4 weeks, like a short-term stay for a month, and like really get to experience
that. Use that as your home base. Like you can still go to places, but live in a place, experience it, enjoy it, and then move to the next when you're ready.
But it's so interesting because we did do that in very short stints, 2-3 weeks at a time, Medellin, Mexico City, stuff like that. It was so cool to be able to every day walk by the mango vendor and like in the afternoon, you know, the market opens up and you can go and pick up some groceries there and then come home and, you know, you start to meet some people and you start to get a real sense of the vibe of the city, which I think is so special. You definitely pick up on these things while you're traveling through a place, but spending more time there. there. The other thing which I think did us really well, which I would definitely suggest to anybody traveling with a friend or a partner, is to really invest that time taking care of that relationship and taking care of the other person, right? Being aware of their needs, being aware of your own needs, regulating your emotions, being aware of what you are like in need of, or like why you're frustrated, when you're tired, when you gotta just be like, I need a fucking time out. Like,
and also like learning each other's like quirky things. And I'm
can you share one?
Yeah, I can totally share one. It used to, like, at the beginning of the trip, it drove me crazy. Like, Mao was constantly buying snacks, and I was like, oh my gosh, why do we have snacks? But then it saved me, because every time I became hangry, he was just like, snack. And then it became really hilarious that we actually traveled around with like our snack bag.
Yeah, our day pack was like our snack bag, and it had everything from oatmeal, which is a lot of like the, not a snack, but breakfast, to some herbs and spices, to snack galore.
Snack. We had, oh man, we had food for days.
Yeah, totally.
So that was like one quirky behavior that I was like, oh, that's different. And it frustrated me at first, and then it became really, really valuable.
That's news to me that it frustrated her.
She benefited from the snack, so it's okay.
We also bought soap along the way everywhere. That's another quirky thing, I guess, that I had. But I don't know if that's advice for your listeners.
So if someone's listening right now, you know, feeling inspired, thinking that they want to do the same thing, what advice would you have for someone who wants to potentially make a big life change like this to do a long-term travel trip?
First of all, do it.
Do it. You will never regret it.
Totally. From a more responsible parenting standpoint.
Because you're such a parent.
One of the advice that we were given by somebody who did it in Haley's life, a close family friend of ours, was don't sell everything you own. Right? A lot of people just sell all their possessions. Sell the car, sell the condo, sell everything. It's good to have something to come back to, right? We almost sold our car, but we got back, and day one we had wheels. Super awesome to be able to have that. Go back to our old apartment, etc.
I think what it comes down to as well is, like, never mind, in my family friend's case, like, they sold everything to fund the trip, and so they were like really coming back to zero, like to ground zero here. So I think yes, the responsible parenting, save for the trip, like don't have all, I mean that's a way to do it, but don't, I wouldn't fund it through selling everything.
Yeah, a few more things. One is save for when you come back, right? So plan, like planning is good, being realistic, like it's great to have fun and say fuck it, it'll be fun and let's go travel, but also having what we ended up doing was having 3 months worth of living expenses for when we got back, in case we didn't have jobs, that we would have at least 3 months, and worst case, we could live out of our parents' basement or whatever, right? At least you know you don't have that stress looming over your head that, oh my god, it's month 11, I don't have a job, what am I gonna come back to, holy shit, all this stuff. So definitely planning for that,
which we did not come back to having money, because we did have that money saved up, and then we bought the house, and then that bought the furniture, so that's a thing.
But I also had signed my contract to go back to work, and I knew how much everything was gonna be.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, all of your advice, your information. It was super, super valuable. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your amazing adventure that you had over the last year. And I hope that you have your next adventure someday soon.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure to talk to you today, Katie. And hopefully the listeners enjoyed it. If they have any questions or whatever.
Where can they find you? Where can they connect with you? Instagram?
We're still pretty active on Instagram, @adventuretravelcouple. We have some of the advice that we put down on adventuretravelcouple.com. We have, for the Canadian listeners especially, maybe some of the US listeners as well, how to do some of the credit card hacks that we use, which is really cool, about applying to credit cards that don't have that waive the first year fees and give you welcome bonus points like air miles or Aeroplan miles and stuff like that. So we did a bunch of that, and it ended up paying for 3 of the big legs of our flights,
and we came home with points that we can travel again.
Yeah, so all that stuff's online, but anyways,
we'll include those in the show notes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Cheers.
Thanks. All right.
And with that, we come to the end of this podcast episode. I hope you all have an amazing morning, afternoon, and evening. Do one thing this week that your future self will thank you for. I'm Kate, and I'm thrilled to have had time in your earbuds today. Thank you for listening. Until next time.